Oh, hold up. Smell test. Go ahead. Sniff those pits. Now, your bits. Feet, toes, come on. Ugh. Could be fresher, right? It's all good. Old Spice Total Body Deodorant Spray is gentle enough to use all over your body, giving you 24/7 lasting freshness with daily use, from pits to toes and down below. So every smell test gets a... Shop for Old Spice Total Body Deodorant.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray and Craig Burley here with you in the studio. And the Premier League returns this weekend after the international break. And it is fair to say it returns with a bang. We have a North London derby, first against third, just a point between Arsenal and Spurs. And a lot to talk about when it does come to this game, as we now welcome in Mario Melchior and Julien Laurent. But I want to start with you, Craig, because we are coming off the back of an international break. It is an early kickoff as well. It's 12:30 in England. Do these factors play a part in such a big game like this?
Only if you listen to the managers. I mean, only if you listen to the managers. I mean, come on. Where are we? End of September. Try to keep track of where we are. Months. Such an enjoyable international break. I lost time. I don't think so. I mean, you come off your international breaks. Most of us have done it. You played or you're not played. Your training's generally a little bit less intense with your international team. A bit more fun, generally. Unless you're playing like a World Cup qualifier or something like that. And so it just depends on your personal fitness. You come back, you travel from wherever it is. It might be a short distance or a long distance. I suppose the distance can matter depending on where you've came from. But no, I mean, I would want to get straight back into it myself as a player. Saturday lunchtime, UK time, let's get out, let's set the tone after this break. Let's keep the momentum going. Both sides have had good momentum, particularly Arsenal. Let's get back and set an early standard on the board, that we can come back from these international games and we can pick up the baton from where we were and we can crack on and show that we potentially are going to hang in there with City for as long as it takes. That's the way I would look at it as a player. I haven't got any problem with playing at 12:30 or 5:30 or on a Sunday. I just want to get playing again.
And a game of this magnitude after the international
break. Well, it's such a big game, isn't it? I mean, North London derby, two teams flying at the start of the season, Arsenal playing some great stuff, Tottenham with a much beefier squad, with a real threat up front, although Arsenal have as well. But, you know, that threat from Tottenham coming from all different angles. It's such a big North London derby. I don't see... There's no real team talk needed here from either manager. They know what's at stake.
Stevie Nicol actually called me, Jules, before the show, and he said to tell you that Arsenal haven't played anyone yet except Manchester United and that they lost to them. So we would like to ask you, how important is it that Arsenal make a statement in this game?
So Stevie's not completely right, because if you look at the position in the table for the team that Arsenal played against, the average is 11. The team that City played, the average is 15, and the teams that Spurs played, the average is 14th in the table. So, okay, maybe you haven't played the big boys and the big names, but you've suddenly played teams that are better ranked in the table or better positioned in the table than Spurs and City, for example. But he's right in the sense that this is the game where we will expect Arsenal to do well, to confirm all the good things that we've seen so far this season. It's great to go away at Crystal Palace, to go away at Brentford and have those very positive wins where you show a lot of the things that you didn't show last season, for example. But then this is where it matters. This is where it matters the most. And we saw Liverpool, for example, struggling a lot last season against the other team of the top four. Arsenal, if they want to finish in the top four, can't afford to do that, especially at the Emirates. They will have to win this game, and then Liverpool the following weekend, and then when City travel, when United travel to London, and Chelsea as well. This is the games that matter a lot, not just for where you are in compared to your progress with other big teams, but also in terms of points to finish in that top four at the end.
Okay, I'll give Stevie a call back, Jules, don't worry, and let him know what you said and if he's not watching the show tonight. Mario, I wanted to talk about the fact that Gabriel Jesus, Martinelli, Gabriel, they all weren't called up to Brazil's most recent round of action. Yes, Brazil were only playing in France, but does this factor into the game that they have had more rest and they haven't had to travel over the break. Will this be an advantage for Arsenal?
Oh, 100%. I mean, when you come back after playing for your national team, I heard Craig saying that too, you know, of course you want to play all the time. But when you come back from yesterday, you just feel that journey. Like, I remember coming back from Holland, regardless of who we played, it just feels like, yes, you want to play, but it's a big game, regardless of anything, because that doesn't mean if you go to your national team. But you just feel like you're traveling. Even if you don't want to say that it's going to kick in, everybody else had it too. But the three Brazilians, that they didn't travel, will be a big advantage to them. One is because of, you know, the fatigue. But on the other side, the only difference it will be is the rhythm. They might not have the rhythm like the guys will have when they come back, but later in the game, they should make the difference. That's the only thing I got to say, because I think that's going to be a big advantage for them.
I think that does give them a little advantage.
Depends how many beers you have at the hotel after the game. I don't know. Do they do that now? I don't know. I mean, I presume they have a couple of sneaky ones here and there just to relax. But you know, go back to Jules's point. Yeah, I actually thought the victory in the opening day for Arsenal was extremely impressive. Away at Palace, decent side, Selhurst Park, great atmosphere there. Always a generally a tricky place to go if they're on form, and I thought a 2-0 victory there, I think, was a good tone to set for Arsenal. Yeah, everybody looked at the United game, played actually pretty well, made some maybe rash substitutions chasing the game, got caught a little bit open on the counter-attack, which is going to be similar to Tottenham. And I think this has to be Mikel Arteta's team talk as well, is look, how do we get the balance of this free-flowing football that we've played, with a real attack from the wide positions in Saka and Martinelli, with Odegaard floating around, and with that threat of the movement of Jesus and his physical presence and his touch, all that up front that we've shown this season, how do we balance that between not being suckered into a game that Tottenham want to play, which is let Arsenal sort of, you know, think they're doing the right things and bossing it, and then just wait, nick it and leave them exposed. United got them exposed at Old Trafford. They didn't outplay them. Arsenal always looked a bigger threat, but two or three occasions was all it took for Arsenal to be exposed, and that's what Tottenham will be looking to do. So the big question would be, has Arteta learned that lesson from the counter-attacking United side going into a game against the counter-attacking Tottenham side?
Well, we asked Jules to put together a combined 11 of the two sides, the best players that he would want to put into a combined 11. And you've gone for Gabriel Jesus over Richarlison here, Jules. Tite, the Brazilian manager, doesn't agree with you. Would you like to defend yourself?
Yeah, I think the start of the season and the season so far from Gabriel Jesus is impressive, really impressive. I know Richarlison scored a couple of goals in the Champions League against Marseille and also in the league, but I don't feel that he's made the same impression that Gabriel Jesus had, playing with the freedom that maybe he didn't have at Manchester City. And I think a front two of Gabriel Jesus and Harry Kane in the form that they are right now is pretty impressive. So, I mean, Richarlison would not be too fine. He's played really well with Brazil, scoring in the two goals in the two games against Ghana and Tunisia. But I feel that Gabriel Jesus so far this season in the Premier League has been really, really outstanding.
Would you go for that as well, Mario? Would you pick Jesus over Richarlison if you had to do this combined 11?
Yeah, because that goes back to the point that I made before, you know, in the sense of saying, like, he was at home, you understand, and Richarlison did the travelling. He performed really well for Brazil. And I think Jesus also want to prove a point, because you don't want that become a normality for you to stay at home regardless if you're not in the team. Come on, any player now, and definitely if you're a Brazilian player, you want to travel with your national team. So I think he is full of confidence, you know, Jesus. He's playing well, he's scoring goals, he's leading the line. This is exactly why he moved to Arsenal. So I think he definitely wants to prove a point, and that's why I would say, yeah, Jesus for me will get that position too.
Let's talk about Son then, because we know what we saw from him in the last Premier League game. Came off the bench,
yep.
Scored a hat-trick. Coming into this game, how important is it to have the best version of him?
Well, I think he plays off the back of that. And primarily, I think if he doesn't do this, he probably doesn't play. And he's on the bench again. But you just feel that Antonio Conte, if they are going to have a successful season, needs him to be on the form that he was last year. Now, we haven't seen it this year up until this point. But this is special. Even this against a Leicester side that's tired and struggling, even if you're off the bench, it's the little things, or the big things on this occasion, these big moments that can ignite a season. And that's what Heung-Min Son has to do. He has to ignite that form of last year. And I think just by that performance alone, that little cameo, is why we'll see Antonio Conte start him in this game at the weekend, because he needs him over the course of a season. Yeah, he's got a bench and he's got a stronger squad now. But Heung-Min Son in that kind of form, and we saw it last year with alongside Harry Kane or playing with him, is pretty much unstoppable. And for that reason, why would you take a guy who's just scored a hat-trick off the bench and say, no, you haven't played well at the start of the season, I'm leaving you on the bench again. He's going out there. That's the confidence builder. Let's take that momentum forward. So I would be shocked if he's not in the starting 11.
Yeah, it's probably been made an easier decision as well, Jules, because of what's going on with Kulusevski right now.
Yeah, Kulusevski was doubtful, who's been so good since arriving, obviously, last January. Even if he lost his place in the team, I mean, he got it back when Son was dropped. But before Son was dropped, it was Son, Richarlison and Kane starting as well, which was a bit harsh, I think, on Kulusevski. But we said when Richarlison was signed by Spurs that now Conte had those four players, maybe even Lucas Moura, if you want, in that rotation and find three, and you could bring on Richarlison and play two up front with Kane. You could start Richarlison and he can start wide and then come inside when needed in the box, when there's crosses from the right or the left-hand side, like we saw again in the goals that he scored against Marseille. So I think it's been very valuable, but I still think that Kulusevski would be a big miss for this game, especially you would expect Spurs to play a lot deeper and a lot on the counter-attack. And I think for that, still Kulusevski is better than Richarlison, for example. Richarlison at home against Leicester, against Marseille, no problem, because you maybe play slightly differently. When you go to Arsenal, you know you're going to play deep. We've seen Spurs playing really deep this season. This is one of the teams that play the deepest and that presses the least higher, if you want, of the top teams. This is the philosophy that Conte has, and he's worked well for them so far this season. But I think Kulusevski, for a game like this one at Arsenal on Saturday, for the game plan that they will implement, I think Kulusevski would have been maybe better suited to it than Richarlison.
Which is what Conte wanted, and so that's why there's less excuses when you think about it. Joe's mentioned those players there, you know, Kane, obviously coming off the back of, you know, more goals for England. Richarlison found his place in the team, could play up front on his own if he had to, if Kane was injured, could play up front with Kane, as he has done at times. You throw in Heung-Min Son after that fantastic hat-trick. You throw in Lucas Moura, who at one point was a stand-in for Tottenham, albeit not this season, Kulusevski. And then you look at Arsenal. If they lose Gabriel Jesus, they're pretty much screwed. They haven't got that. Yeah, Eddie Nketiah could come in or whatever, but they haven't got that firepower to make those kind of changes. And that's why there's a lot of pressure on this Tottenham side, because it is such a good squad, particularly in that department.
Talking about the pressure on this Tottenham side, there's a lot of talk about them as well, with the future of Antonio Conte being discussed in Italy. Been speculation linking him with the Juventus job. This is what he had to say about it. I think this is disrespectful for the coach that works in Juventus, and it was disrespectful for me working for Tottenham. I've always said I'm happy and enjoying my time with Tottenham. Then we have the whole season to find the best solution for the club, for me. So, Craig, if he's frustrated by these reports, why doesn't he just sign an extension and make sure that the team doesn't have this type of distraction and this type of talk around them right now?
Well, I'm just looking from the outside. I mean, he got backed pretty well by Daniel Levy and the ownership in the summer. But he's a kind of manager, I think, that's just always wary that it might stop, and that if they go to the well again in January and they're in a good position and Levy doesn't back him, then I think he wants to have a little bit more leeway, a little bit more skin in the game in terms of his position. And so I can understand it to a certain extent, because he wants to keep the club on their toes. Okay, you've backed me, and this is the way I'm seeing it, you've backed me up to this point, but this is only good enough to take us to from point A to point B, but if we want to get to point D, there's more to be done. And I'm not just going to sign a long-term deal if I think you're not going to do it. So I think there's a little bit of keeping each other on their toes here and leaving their options open. I might be wrong, but he just seems the kind of manager that likes to keep his ownership, on their toes.
Do you see it that way, Jules?
and to keep his options open. He is so good. Remember when he was linked with PSG last season and he said, well, it's always nice to be linked with big clubs. This is what he does, you know. And again, in his answer today, they're like, let's find the best solution for me through the season. I mean, this is so typical Antonio Conte. And I think he's great. And Craig is right. He will keep them on their toes. And I could not guarantee you, but I would not be surprised if he was waiting until the end of the season before planning any talks or planning anything or signing, or because it would not be like him, because he wants to keep again those options, the options open. So no Champions League next season, he might not be sure to stay. Champions League next season with a team that improves, get closer to Liverpool, closer to City, closer to the big guys. He might stay knowing that Udogie is coming, for example, next summer, that there will be more money spent on the team, that Kane, for example, will stay, all of that. Then he was saying, you know what, this is a good time to be here. Let's continue another year or two. But right now, one, he's in no rush. And two, he will keep saying those little sentences there and there to remind Daniel Levy that, yeah, we need to find the best solution for me as well. You know, and it's always nice to be linked with big clubs.
Yeah, of course. I hear you laughing there, Mario. I wonder what your thoughts are on it and what you'd feel like as a player in his dressing room and hearing your coach saying things like this.
Yeah, I remember when in my time, I went to go and watch him play one time. And I feel like as a manager, he's no different to that. He is a guy that likes to be in control, you know, like, and what Craig said, Lauren said it, he's the guy that wants to be in control. And there comes a moment when he's not in control or he can't dictate or sing the song that you like everybody to sing, he will make a move. And I feel like now, also, in the beginning, we have to remember, this was a guy that was also saying publicly, he said that if Spurs doesn't make a move, I'm not going to be happy and I might not be able to achieve certain things. Okay, they made the move and look what happened to him. He gone quiet, he got on with his work and built a team that is performing really, really well. So I feel like just what the other said, at the end of the season, I think he's going to look at it again and see what is the club wants to do. And guys, come on, everybody knows Levy. If you want to negotiate with a man like that, you know you've got to be in a strong position. So he's definitely going to keep his moment to stay in a strong position. I think that's what Conte is doing.
Well, Arsenal favourites going into this game. Craig's on tomorrow's show, so we're going to wait until tomorrow to hear your prediction on this one. Well, but I would like to get the thoughts of Jules on what this outcome is going to be here.
Yeah, I went for a draw, I think, 2-2, because I think Arsenal will score, will create, will have a lot of the ball. I think their position play is great, what they've showed so far. But I also think that the way they play and the way Spurs will have their game plan on and sit deep and hit them on the counter is so good for Spurs. We saw, like Craig was mentioning, against United, when the high line of Arsenal is there, but the counter press or the press is not as efficient as it should be, then you find some gaps. Yes, Spurs don't have a midfielder like Christian Eriksen, but they've got Harry Kane who can easily drop deeper and find similar passes to the ones that Eriksen found or other United players in that Arsenal defeat. So for me, I think maybe Arsenal will be in control for most of it, but there will be times in the game where Spurs could find gaps into their defence, especially on the counter. That's why I went for a draw.
2-2 from Jules. What do you say, Mario?
I had the same, so that's kind of funny. Then he had 2-2. No, I had 2-2. Why I said that? Because Arsenal is the one that's in top form, yeah? I mean, we're not going to lie about it. They're playing really great football. I feel like Spurs, they've been waiting for so long, but Conte built a team of real strong competitive and people that will turn up at the game. And I think the competition that he has in his team right now makes them perform the way they're performing. So going against each other, these are the games, guys. I mean, when you talk about derbies, this is a great derby to be. I never played it, but I'm just to watch. So I feel like they are definitely in balance, both teams. And I feel like this is going to be a nice one, but I'll go for a draw.
It's more exciting derby because both teams are in a better position to at least have a palpable season.
Right.
Rather than, you know, teams that have been lucky if they're going to get in the top four. Now, in years gone by, both particularly Arsenal were super competitive, particularly in the Wenger years. So it has got more hinging on it, bearing in mind there is more anticipation of what these teams could do this year. I just want to go back to one thing, was the distraction that you talked about, potential distraction with a manager who isn't signing a contract. I don't want to hear anybody talking about distraction or making excuses if I'm a Tottenham player. And I'm not suggesting they will, but they may be, and it could pop up in the back of newspapers and players say, ah, manager might be leaving, things are not great. No, 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 no. As a player, you listen, here's the deal. Players come and go, managers come and go. Unless you're Sir Alex, Wenger, Klopp at the moment, Guardiola, 5 years, whatever it is. Most managers are 18 months, 2 years. You might get the odd one doing 3, 4 or 5 or a bit longer. Look at Antonio Conte himself. Look at Mourinho, travelled around, all these guys. Managers come and go. It's something players have to accept. So whether he signs a new contract or not has got no bearing on what these Tottenham players do on the field. That's their job. Their job's not to worry about what he's doing. We've all played for a manager that's going to be leaving or might be leaving. Doesn't mean you don't go out and play in a weekend. It doesn't mean he doesn't give you the instructions that he wants in the dressing room. So, you know, this Antonio Conte contract scenario that's going to play out will have no bearing on what Tottenham do on the field. What they do on the field is what they do on the field.
There you go. No excuses for the Spurs players going into this
ever
one.
Here.
I love Craig Burley to deal with.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire, you need Indeed.
Another game coming up this weekend is Crystal Palace against Chelsea. It's Graham Potter's first Premier League game with Chelsea. Palace have got a strong record against the Big Six at home. Have you got Potter getting his first win with Chelsea here then, Jules?
No, I don't. I don't, because I think it's a really tough place to go. And I like what Patrick Vieira is doing there. And we've said it before. We praised him before. I think Graham Potter obviously didn't play the weekend before the international break because the game against Liverpool was postponed. And the Salzburg game, which is the only game that he had in the Champions League, was not very convincing. That draw, the way they played, the way they defended. And the problem is that 75% of his squad had left for the international break, so he could not really work with anyone or anything on what he wanted and the philosophy that he has and the changes that he would make and the differences between him and Thomas Tuchel, for example. So I don't know how ready they are. And they might be, and they might blow Palace away and win 3-0, for example, and have like a good idea of what Potter wants them to do, but they could also have not be ready. And I think it could take time for Potter to implement all the ideas that he had, to find the right team, the right balance. And after not being able to work with most of his players for the last 10 days, I'm not sure if they will be ready for this weekend.
Because it's not going to get any easier, Craig, because after this game, then they've got Milan, who are top of the group in their Champions League group. Chelsea are bottom so far. We know he had that draw, as we just saw, against Salzburg. Going into this one, if Jules is right and they don't win it, does that start to make the players a little bit concerned? Will there be murmurings then? Will they be worried?
No, I think Graham Potter will be slightly concerned if he doesn't get the result. I think his tenure as Chelsea manager has been badly timed. It's not his fault. We had the death of the Queen and the postponements and the international football that Jules has mentioned. It has meant that he's had a skeleton squad to work with. So he's really putting a patchwork team out there, isn't he? And until you get time on the training field, which is what he did at Brighton, it's what he did in Scandinavia, albeit he's working with a lot better quality players now. But that does take time, and he's got, you know, he's got plenty of money in the bank, but he just want to get some momentum. Not 100%. It's going to come at Selhurst Park this weekend because, as I mentioned earlier, it's been a difficult place to go. Jules is right. Vieira's done a very, very good job there. And you don't just turn Chelsea into this pacey attacking side overnight. It's been very pedestrian about the way they've played. They might bag a narrow win, but I think it's going to be a tight game down there, possibly a draw.
So what do you expect from them in this game, Mario, from Chelsea? What do you expect to see from them?
The only thing what I will go for, the advantage for Chelsea, is I went for a 2-0 game, and I'm going to tell you why. Because I feel like Potter is not the guy that wants to dictate the game. So away from home, I feel like if knowing Patrick, he wants to win. And if Chelsea can sit back and they're comfortable in sitting back, I think the way Potter likes to play, he doesn't mind if they hit him on the break, especially going to that stadium. It's always been tough. It's not an easy one. The guys already mentioned it. When you go there, you know, it's never your favorite place to play, I think, as a player, because they get so much support behind them and you want to perform as good as you can. But one thing you know is that Potter knows that if he sits back and he hits him on the break, you understand, that could only be his advantage, because we all know that, you know, they have Zaha in their team. That's the focus point that always wants to get the crowd going. So as long as they really manage to control the game 90 minutes long, I feel that this could be Potter's his first win and maybe push the team on to the way he wants to play, because it's going to be very important for him.
They're not going to sit back against Crystal Palace, though, are they, Mario?
Yes, and I'm going to tell you why. Because he is not the... You know, if you look at Chelsea now, they're away from home. I don't expect them to go out there and start firing. You know, people maybe see Chelsea like, okay, a team, it's Chelsea. They're in control. They're dictating the tempo. They're taking the ball. They're playing the football. No, the last game I saw Chelsea, I didn't look at him like that. I feel like he is working to build his team the way he wants them to play. And I think against Palace, it's not going to be one of those sides. As long as everybody's going to ride Palace like, oh, they're a smaller team. But guys, please, don't get surprised, because that team can really surprise you when you go there. And regardless if we think Chelsea's a big giant, no.
14 points off the big six last season, Palace.
Yeah, they've got a bit of everything about them. They've got some good defenders, solid in the middle of the park, made some good summer signings in there, some big, powerful lads up front. They've got a lot of pace about them as well. Yeah, and Selhurst Park predominantly is one of the best. Okay, it's one of the oldest grounds in the Premier League. It needs a fair bit of updating, but it's a great atmosphere. The fans are terrific down there. And Graham Potter at the moment, because of this lack of time on the training field, just needs to get result. He doesn't want to end up being in an Erik Ten Hag scenario where he's staring at defeat after defeat and he's trying to implement the way he's playing and he's trying to figure out the playing staff, but they're not getting results. That's okay at Brighton when you're going 3, 4 or 5 and not getting a result and then you win a couple. It's not okay at Chelsea because all the eyes are on you. And so he needs to just, at the moment, get some results on the board, more important than really the way the team are going to play in the long run. That's going to take time. But he's in with the big boys now and it's going to be judged on results. And this is a tough one. You mentioned that Milan is going to be a tough one. And he's going to find out about this playing squad as well. This playing squad that was hastily assembled, some of them, Aubameyang at the last minute, for Thomas Tuchel, and then he's sacked. These are not players that Graham Potter would probably have wanted, but they're players that he's got, and he's going to have to deal with them.
And if things aren't going well, you wonder if Todd Bowley being back in the news will help matters, or maybe it will actually provide a distraction. Latest news is that he's trying to create a multi-club project, and he's trying to get his hands on Lyon as well. What is the thoughts of people in this Jules, and I say people because I want to know what the word's been in France on this and what the word's been in London on it, what you're hearing, because I know you've got your finger on the pulse in both countries there.
Yeah, I don't think Todd Boehly was ever in the running for Lyon. And, you know, Textor and his team have got it. I expect the completion of the deal to be now in the next few days. There's been new investors coming with Textor to, I think, to sort of finish off the consortium, if you want. Ares, the company will bring a lot of money in, 300 million euros. Textor will play the race and some of his associates as well. So it's a big deal, but I don't think Todd Boehly was never really in the running for Lyon. I mean, the multi-club ownership is an idea that we mentioned it with Gab on our show this morning. One, apart from if you're Leipzig and Salzburg and the Red Bull Group, we're not really sure if it works so far. I mean, you look at Manchester City, a lot of the players that they have in all the different clubs, rarely any of them play for City. The fact as well that if you own two big clubs, you can't own two big clubs who play in Europe, for example, in European competition. So if you have Chelsea and Lyon, it's very likely that at some point both will qualify for the Champions League, so you'll have to sell one of the two. Unless you're Red Bull and you can somehow dodge the rule a bit, which Todd Boehly would not be able to do. So you're already targeting, and we see with City, for example, smaller clubs like Girona, like Troyes, clubs like that, club in Belgium that are not as big as Club Brugge, for example, or Anderlecht. So it's a very different mindset than going for a Lyon or a Milan or an Inter Milan.
Todd Boehly's name seems to pop up all over the shop at the moment. That's his business, him and his investors.
Or maybe not sometimes it's his business. Maybe sometimes it's fake news, but because they've been putting themselves out there, the name is popping up.
Think here we have a group of people who really don't know anything about this sport or a lot. They know about other sports and business, fair enough. They have plenty of money behind them. But they've came in. Chelsea needs a rebuild from you know, they've changed the manager. But Granit Xhaka, check. There's people behind, there's roles behind the scenes that need to be filled. There's a bunch of players have been signed, clearly by a manager who's been sacked and now been replaced by another manager who probably wouldn't have gone after those players. That doesn't tell me that somebody needs to be going worrying about all this other guff around the world. You know, all-star games and blah, blah, blah. That tells me somebody needs to get their finger on the pulse at their own club, first and foremost. You know, we don't know how Graham Potter's going to do at this club. But we do know these players that most of them are brought in, most of them, were players that Thomas Tuchel wanted because nobody else was there to make a decision. And if Thomas Tuchel wasn't making those decisions, it was being made by these people behind the scenes, which is even more worrying. But it just seems to me at the moment, bearing in mind there is a big gulf between Chelsea and Man City and Liverpool, particularly City. Obviously, Liverpool not this year at the moment. But there is this big gulf domestically. This ownership really needs to worry about in-house stuff before it starts worrying about everything else on the periphery. That, to me, because they've already made baffling decisions on a football front. If you're going to sack Thomas Tuchel, fine, do it. If it's common sense, do it in the summer. If it's not, let him bring the players in and give them time. So none of this is kind of making sense. It's a little bit worrying from a club perspective. If I was a supporter of Chelsea and I'm looking about how we can be in Champions League finals again and how we can be one of, you know, dominating in England along with City and all that, and I'm looking at my ownership out there running around talking about all these other outside influences that the Chelsea fans really have, and we're talking about Chelsea, we're talking about Boehly, they have no care about. All they care about, what can you do for our club? You've bought it from Abramovich, whether we agree or not, he was successful the way I went about it. No matter if you agree about the hiring and firing. What can you do for us? And what he can do is not run about coming up with these willy-nilly ideas when, quite frankly, he needs to get his own ship in order.
You mentioned the All-Star Game. The Times are actually reporting that when it comes to the All-Star Game, the more popular and more likely outcome of an All-Star game would be a Premier League 11 against an 11 from one of the other top leagues, say a Bundesliga.
And then why don't
Liga.
You have a round robin and get the top ones from Liga and the top ones from Italy and the top ones from Spain, go down to the African continent, get all the ones from Africa, then go to South America, have a round robin tournament, let them all play. Don't give anybody a rest.
You should get on the board for
that. We've already got the World Cup. We've got the World Cup squeezed in November this year. We've just come off a pandemic. We have the Euros. We have all these other competitions. We have the Champions League. We now have the Europa Conference in Europe. We have games coming thick and fast. And I don't feel sorry for players or managers. I don't. Because we've been there. I don't feel sorry for them. But you can't just keep adding games. Right? It's not possible. We're all talking. And people with common sense are talking about how they can reduce the schedule slightly without eating into the finances, which are hugely important. But you just can't keep adding these these cheerleading games, which in the face of things look great. But in the truth of the matter, we just don't have calendars for things like this. We have players travelling all... It's a global game now. We have players travelling all over the world to play these internationals. We have seasons finishing and players going off. It might not be a World Cup, there'll be a Copa America. There might not be a World Cup, there'll be a Gold Cup. There'll be something. And this is a global game now. These players are not getting much of a rest. We don't need, I don't think, this kind of nonsense popping up on the periphery of all these other important games that we have at the moment. It's an utter nonsense.
Jules, what are you hearing about this version of an All-Star game?
Well, they keep bringing new ideas, and again, I think our friend Todd is probably, you know, behind it a bit. I mean, I just wonder what the next one is. You know, in France, we've got a charity game every year where some former great footballers like Zidane play with some former great rugby players like Chabal or Michalak, and they do one half of football and one half of rugby for charity again. And I wonder if maybe the next idea from Todd Boehly and the others is, why don't we mix the NBA and basketball and football? Hey, Todd, that's a great idea. We could do half of football, half of basketball. You can play in the States if you want. That's going to be a lot. And you know what? Play at Christmas. It's even better because we can all eat our turkey while watching the NBA / Premier League All-Star game 11v5, 5v11, whatever you want. I mean, come on.
You watch that stuff here. That Pro Bowl, like, I never watched it. The Pro Bowl, I think they're scrapping the Pro Bowl, I believe. Nonsense. They go to the Pro Bowl. I think I flicked it on once, I think. They don't even tackle each other. What a lot of nonsense. All this garbage, right? Hey, what about these players? You go away, oh, here's the Premier League 11, we're going to play the Bundesliga 11 or the Serie A 11, whatever it is. Oh, you got Liverpool's Mo Salah and you got Manchester City's Erling Haaland, to mean his dad. Erling Haaland, oh, well, let's go away and play in this game. Oh, Mr. Guardiola, here's Erling Haaland coming back. Oh, guess what? He's got a broken leg. Wasn't that a wonderful idea? I mean, what a lot of that.
It sounds like Mario's not having it either. You're not a fan, Mario?
No, you know, the only worry I have is that you know, you're going to get guys get injured, you know, like Greg just said, you know, like they have so many games. The quality of football is not going to come down to giving them more games because then the quality goes down. And why are we entertained by certain leagues? And I'm not only highlighting the Premier League, but La Liga, any league around the world, the Italian league. It's because we are watching them performing at the highest level. But the moment we're going to give them more games, do we think we're going to see better games? No. We're going to get less quality and less performing. The other thing is that, guys, we're talking about a guy, you know, Todd Boehly. He's a businessman. His point of view will always be business orientated. If we have a problem with that, then I don't think the problem is only that we cannot highlight only problems at his side. It's also the people that agree to certain levels. Because when he comes in, what do you expect him to be? To change his pattern? Because his pattern was, he's a businessman. He's always going to look for opportunities. And anyone that is in business always looks from what is not out there and what can we implement, regardless if we like it. The only thing is that they might have had people that they're surprised by in England. They're saying like, wow, what's going on now? No, guys. When he came in, you already knew where you were heading to. So now he comes in and gives you opportunities.
Even international international football, when the international break came around, when it wasn't qualifiers, they were so bad, these international friendlies, so bad, there was so little interest, that UEFA had to go and figure out a different format to try and breathe some life into these dates. And the UEFA Nations League, it's not a perfect science, but it's a damn sight better than what those internationals were. But if you can't drum up the interest from players and fans to go and play international football, how the hell are you going to drum up the interest for these games that are nothing more than akin to a charity match? I mean, so how are you going to do it? And I agree totally with what Mario said. The reason some of these leagues around the world are the most watched are because it's elite level. And to stay elite level, you need to stay at elite fitness. And you can't just keep adding games and keep elite fitness. You can't have one without the other. The quality will get diminished. The money will go down. The viewership will go down. But guess what? One or two of these owners might think they've made more money. But honestly, you got to, and I think I heard Kevin De Bruyne talking about it a month or two ago. Somebody has to have a good think about what's happening to the players. And I hear these people, we don't feel sorry for them. They get $1 million a month or whatever. It's not about that. It's not about $1 million a month or $100,000 a month or $10 a month. It's about the state they take the pitch on a Saturday. When you pay your money as a season booker or through the turnstile or whatever it is, you go there to see these elite players fit and ready. You don't go to see them, oh, I've just come off another flight. Oh, we're a bit tired today. We just beat the Bundesliga 11. So we're not going to be able to give our best today. Hope you enjoyed your $100 ticket at the turnstile, but I'm a bit knackered.
Come on. Tomorrow, maybe we will get... Go on, Mario.
Yeah, it's what Greg said. You know, like, when I played football, right, the only thing I never wanted to feel like that I was tired before we even had the kickoff. I hated it. I remember those ice baths, you understand, sitting in and trying to recover really fastly. The only thing you want when the referee blows the whistle is that you're 100% fit to perform to your best standard. And if we're going to add more games to those guys, we are not going to enjoy watching them. Believe me, we're going to see now and then. It's going to take us too long to watch them really perform the way we want them to perform. And I don't want that. I don't want them to get injured. I want to watch football and I want to be entertained.
I'm sure there'll be more talk about this on tomorrow's show.
Well, I've got the feeling Todd Bowley quite likes people to talk about them.
Premier League 11 against a Mars 11. You know, it doesn't need to stop, does it? Anyway, make sure you join the team tomorrow. ESPN FC is available 7 days a week.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On Wednesday, on an interview on Catalan Radio, Barcelona VP Eduard Romeu was asked about the viability of Messi's possible return, and he said it would be possible financially because if he returned, it would be as a free agent. But it's a decision which has to be made by the coaching staff and the player. It doesn't correspond to me to make those decisions, but it would be viable. Jules, why is he saying this?
Well, I think it's good that you still keep the door open to a potential Messi return. I think the fans would like that. Can you imagine 2 years after leaving in the circumstances that he left and all the tears and everything, to be coming back would be, I guess, pretty special. If you're Laporta, you say, look, we made the club better and now we were even able to bring him back home. I mean, no pressure on Xavi when the phone call from Laporta said, OK, we can sign him. Do you want him or not? Because right now, in the structure of the team, in the 4-3-3 formation, in what we've seen from, I don't know, a Gavi and Pedri partnership in that midfield and the two wingers and Lewandowski, there's no room for Messi. So Messi being Messi and the GOAT, you can easily find it, but you need to change the way you play. You need to change your formation. He can't play wide anymore. He's too old now. It doesn't work. We saw that in Paris last season. So you need a central role behind a striker like he's playing right now for PSG. So is Xavi ready to change everything for Messi? Maybe. Would Messi want him back? I mean, it would be almost impossible for Xavi, if he has the opportunity to bring him back, to say no. I mean, one, because they're friends, two, because it's Messi. So let's see. And Messi might not want to go back, by the way. He might want to, you know, to go to MLS, to have another season in Paris. I don't know, there's a lot of things that can happen that can influence his mind, but he might also want to come back. They still have the house, obviously, in Barcelona. They go back a lot. So it's not totally impossible either.
He's had quite the season so far for club and country.
Yeah, I mean, he might stick at five. I mean, he might want to go back. And I can understand, maybe from his point of view. But from a Barcelona point of view, I just think it's utter nonsense. Because if you're the club, Messi has been a phenomenon. An unbelievable phenomenon at that football club. Some of the things that he's done for Barcelona over that period will never be seen again, right? The goals, the dribbles, the artistry. But that was then. This is now. This football club's a huge football club. It has to be forward-thinking. It has to be progressive. It has to look forward. They've made changes. They've made new signings. They've brought younger players through. It's not a time to go back to what was, because it wasn't what it was. It's a time to look forward. And back Xavi or whoever it's going to be long-term, with this progressive side going forward and building for the future. This just smells to me of just trying to make a few fans happy for a little bit of time.
What do you think, Mario? Yeah. No looking back?
No, I, you know, like what Greg says, look, we're not looking back, but I think they're looking at the bigger picture. I think if they will bring Messi back, it will only be based on saying what the future of the like, okay, the system that they're using of bringing him back is similar to what Ajax did. You understand? They bring some of their key players back. You know, like we had a coach that was at Barcelona, Frank Rijkaard. He came back, was the ensemble. Everybody could ask him questions. I remember I was 60 years old sitting and asking him questions. If Messi comes back, the glory, one of the best players arguably in the world, if he comes back, the only reason for him to come back is because they have so much future planning for him to implement something that is key for that club. Not only for, because if you do it like what Greg said, I agree with this. If it's for the fans, you got to be careful, guys, because now you could break something what they're building now. But if you're looking at bringing Messi back because you feel he needs to be part of the DNA of Barcelona, what he clearly already is, but I'm just saying, like, what the club wants to do in the future and uses his image, his face, his history and everything, oh, you couldn't find a better one. But if they're not going to do that and just to play him, that becomes a tricky situation, because now you're going to maybe create some turbulence that you're not looking forward to, because you got some young new stars coming now.
If they think, I agree, if they think he has coaching, maybe even management potential, and I don't know.
Just or because, behind the scenes role like Zidane at first.
Yeah, yeah, if they think there's some sort of structural aspect to this, then I can see that as common sense. Maybe they see him as a future manager. Just because you've been one of the greatest of all times doesn't mean you're going to be a manager. I saw it firsthand with Ruud Gullit, World Footballer of the Year twice. Can't really manage players, couldn't manage players. There's no guarantee. But if that's the side of it that maybe long-term they're looking at, that's fine. But if we're talking about from a playing perspective, I don't think it makes much sense. But yeah, maybe Messi is going to be a manager. It doesn't seem to me, looking from the outside, the type of person that would be sitting on the bench. But I might be wrong.
Speaking of things that don't make sense, I wonder if you saw this week, poor Kostas Manolas, in one of these club unveiling videos that we've been seeing so many of, he was asked to pose alongside a lion as he signs for Sharjah FC. And as you can see, he was a little bit worried about that, as I would have been, I think. Did you see this?
I would have felt safe. I'll tell you why. Because you know that how they'd cordoned it off with the yellow tape. I've often found yellow tape stops lions in their tracks. If that lion attacks, yeah. if you're the other side of the tape, you're safe. But
it's on the wrong side as well.
Wow. Well, he made that noise too, eh?
I think he's probably keeping all the kids or people safe behind the cordoned off area. I mean,
would you do it, Mario? Would you get in there with a lion, even if it was tied up?
Listen, I'm going to tell you something. Look, if they will ask me to do that lion stuff, I will tell you. You maybe put some glass in front of me. Then I stand between it and then make sure you cover it with some rope or whatever. But are you crazy? I'm a footballer. I'm not a comedian. This is a comedian job. This
Mario, you would have said how much?
Never, I've never done it for money, my friend. So this I would not do for money.
How much? How much? Another
Jules, how much to pose with a lion?
I mean, there's nothing you can pay me. It's too expensive.
Exactly. But
you see already that Costas is quite far from the lion, because I think already, even before the row, he's not too convinced about the idea. And then the row, I think, is the final choice. And like, I need to get out here now before he eats me.
The lion could be hungry, eh?
But you know what you got to understand, boys. It was maybe in the small print of his contract. He said, "You're getting this money, but at the bottom it said, but you must pose with a rather large lion." I don't know, who the hell comes up with this nonsense?
Maybe I don't know. They're all trying to outdo each other, aren't they? Everyone's trying to maybe not trying to outdo each other, but trying to be inventive.
Where
with
is
the player
this, by
unveiling?
The way? I don't even know where it is.
In the UAE.
All right.
Yeah. So that's the latest one. Let's see what they'll come up with next. These three guys will be with us on the latest edition of Extra Time. I don't know if they'll be posing like Pablo Zabaleta yesterday, but if you head on over to our YouTube page, you can catch yesterday's show and today's show, where they will be answering your tweets.
Listen closely. As a master painter carefully brushes Benjamin Moore Regal Select down the seam of the wall. It's like poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore. See the love.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Let's take a look at what we've got coming up for you on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Plus, in the Championship, it is Hull City against Luton Town. Make sure to tune in to that one. Gio Reyna has been hit with an injury once again. He's going to be out for 7 to 10 days with a muscle strain, so you won't be seeing him in action for Borussia Dortmund at the weekend. Just taking a look at his injury record so far, and no doubt there'll be a bit of talk about that coming up on one of our other shows, which we'll tell you about in just a moment. But first, Bundesliga is back this weekend, and it all returns tomorrow with Bayern Munich against Bayer Leverkusen. We've got coverage of that beginning for you at 2 p.m. Eastern. Make sure to join us. We'll tell you why these clubs have not been doing so well this season, and hopefully they will be looking to get things back on track.
Why are they even taking Reyna to international football when he's had so many injuries? I'll let somebody else talk about that.
Yes, somebody else will be talking about this as well. Tata Martino. Remember that he's under a lot of criticism because Mexico gave up a 2-0 lead to lose 3-2 to Colombia in the friendly action. Titanic, obviously sinking after starting out well in that game, was just a friendly, but he says soccer in Mexico is peculiar. Mexico has investment and at the moment it has money. So how do we make a better national team? Mexican players don't leave Liga MX because teams won't let them. They don't leave because their wages are exorbitant. It's a shame we don't seek to fix things from the other side and that everything is on the manager or the players. That's not the debate that Mexico needs to improve footballistically. Yes, there will definitely be a lot of talk about this on the award-winning Football Americas with Seb and Herc. Yeah. And I wonder how much your appearance had to do with that award.
I did see a picture of Hercules Gomez holding some sort of trophy. Have we any identification of the...
It is a telly award.
What the hell's that?
It's a special award.
For what? Being on telly? Do you get it if you're on telly?
Yeah, for the show.
How come we not got it?
It's an official
telly
award. What about us?
Does it...
What's
the telly? Never heard of a telly. Well, I mean,
If we got one, would you be happy? Stay with us. Extra
a telly for us is a
next.
TV in Scotland. What the hell's
this
a telly?
This is the farm he's in.
Who cares?
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Jules, Mario and Craig
still
here.
Still laughing because you know those two are just going to tweet about this. What the hell's a telly?
It's an award. It's a special award. What do you want for them? An Emmy? An Oscar?
It sounds like someone made that up. It sounds like someone made that name up. It doesn't sound real. I've never heard of it either.
In case you didn't see the main show, our friends at Football Americas won an award called a Telly Award.
Yeah.
For their brilliant show.
Yeah. That's made up.
It's for video and television
telly
across
award.
All
it's got
screens.
To be, it's got to be what?
It was established in 1979. Yeah.
Heard of it. It's a bit like these people that say, it's like the Emmys and all, I couldn't give a stuff about that either. You know when people say, and they put it on their Twitter, didn't they, as well, sometimes if they Emmy award winning pundit. Get your ego out of here.
Can't you be happy for your friends at Football America?
Oh, well, that's an Emmy. Whatever the hell that is.
Well, if you win an
Emmy. Have I won a telly? Have I won a telly in Scotland? If you win a telly, you win a TV. A TV is a telly. We call it a telly. Watch the telly.
They won a telly award.
Okay. They've won a telly.
Congratulations,
a lot of plasma.
Seb and all the team at Football Americas.
Hey, well done, boys. What did we win? Tell me what we won. Nothing.
We won the love and affection of our viewers, and that's the most important.
Every time I come on here, that's my aim.
All right, first question. Which game will be
won? At least I was here on time today. At least Jules was here on time today. At least you were here on time today.
Who wasn't?
Well, I'm not giving it away, but he's Dutch.
I was on time, man. I gave you the smile from the moment I walked in, Greg.
2 minutes.
I just said, what's up, brother?
5:58, live at 6, and you were not on the camera.
I was with a big smile. I was like this.
You
hey, guys,
up,
how are you?
Usual. Come in, he swanned up, he came swanning in and went, I got this. Yeah, I got this TV lark.
It was 2 minutes before we went to air.
Correct.
And he was chill and calm as you like.
It's unprofessional.
And he's delivered on the show.
I was here 3 minutes before.
Exactly.
2 minutes is unprofessional.
You're just annoyed that you weren't last.
Yeah, I know. Well, actually, when I saw Mario wasn't here, I nearly walked back out. Refused to come in until... Anyway, come on, questions.
All right,
questions. Let's get this late where Jules is.
Which game will be more entertaining and which one will produce a bigger surprise, the London Derby or the Manchester Derby, Jules?
Well, I hope it's the North London Derby because I'd be there. So I want to see, I want to see a good game. I don't want to see like a boring nil-nil draw, which I don't think would be the case. But I want to see the atmosphere, and the Emirates has been very good this season in terms of atmosphere. I want to see that. I want to see two teams we explain with two different identities, but going at each other. I want some intensity. I want some physicality. I want some goals. And I'm sure we can get that in Manchester on Sunday. It's just I won't be there. So I would rather it happening in London on Saturday.
Selfish. For Mario, do you think Depay's fitness might be an issue on how well Holland do at the World Cup? Also, even if he is healthy, could his playing time troubles at Barcelona hinder their success also?
Oh yeah, 100%. Because I feel like, look, playing as a player, you want the rhythm, you want to play every week. And I think that could be a downside to him, especially the way he plays, because he's used to always playing. And then it's going to be his first moment if he's not performing that many games in back-to-back. But the only thing, and he's one of the key figures as well in the side, because he's the key striker for them. But I want to make sure that if he can stay fit, even when he's not playing, train harder to make sure that he gets into the World Cup really well. I feel like he can make a big difference. And if not, it could be somebody that they might miss on the top of his game.
I like the name of this, Stevie's hate for Arsenal top four.
Maybe he's hunkered down on that one.
He has. He even rang me tonight ahead of the show, as you heard.
Well, of course he hasn't rung me, obviously. He's ringing everybody. He's bored. He's at home.
He's missing us all.
His wife was out for lunch the other day with my wife just to get away from him. Away from that man. Sat at home, he's arm in a sling like that, just eating. one arm in a sling. That I don't know, is it his left or right, whatever it is. The other one's just right. chaffing away on chips. His left, I've been told. The okay. other one's just scooping up ice cream, chips, chocolate cake. It's just like a. If somebody's pressed the button, it just keeps going like that.
Pie.
Yeah, cottage pie, shepherd's pie, any pie. Here we go.
Oh, well, we wouldn't have known what he looks like until Dan Thomas shared his personal picture with everybody.
Which was?
He sent a picture of his arm in a sling, and I think he's topless on it. And Dan.
Hold on, Stevie was topless.
Yeah, half naked.
Some things in life you shouldn't.
You should not do it.
Well, you can tell Dan that tomorrow. All right. Jules, would you rather France win the World Cup this year or PSG win the treble?
Don't do this to me. Don't do this to me. That's so. I've been expecting that question every time I've been on extra time in the last few weeks, and it never came. And then UK, who I thought you were a friend, really, I really thought you were a friend, asking that question. Stuff France. I'm going PSG winning the Champions League every single day. Come on!
Yeah, France have won the World Cup, haven't they?
Yeah.
Recently as well. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, for somebody who didn't want to answer that question, he answered it pretty easily, didn't he?
He knows, he knows that's an easy answer. It's PSG all day.
All right. Craig, what makes a great manager? Experience on the pitch and in the dressing room? Or are the intangible qualities more important, like personality traits?
I go over what I said on the show for those that watched it, for those that didn't. I was talking about Ruud Gullit, World Footballer of the Year twice, and he's not the only one, but you know, you look at that, you think, God, guy's done it all, you know, he's got to. But then you have to manage a dressing room. You have to manage all the stuff in the periphery. And then you've got to coach, and then you've got to get your team behind you. So, and the players are going to respect you, and the players, doesn't matter how great a player you've been, if players are not seeing what they like from a coaching perspective, and they have doubts, they'll quickly lose respect for you, because you're not that player anymore, you're a manager. So I think personality, being able to deal with players is a big part of it. And then, you know, of course, tactics, and some of that changed because Wenger, well, not so much Wenger, but Ferguson always had really good coaches with him to help him. Wenger did as well, but I think Wenger did a lot of it himself when he came in. It was a sort of changing of the guard. And then these managers that can make in-game changes. It's so important, because any manager can set a team up. But when you go out in the field and it's not... I remember playing a big international one time. And our manager said, it was a big qualifier, and our manager said, look, if we get at this team, their manager is not very good at making in-game changes. He'll set his team up, and then that's it. If the game's going away from him, he doesn't know how to change it. And I think all these things are super important. But I don't know what Mario thinks, but dealing with players is a big percentage of being able to manage.
I think, Greg, I agree with you. You know, the power of a manager comes down to the psychological level. You understand? To really, can you trigger that player? Because you could be a great player, and I've been, you know, just like himself, you know, like Greg, like you say, I've been around managers that were great players, and I've been around just guys that were just good at managing. And I feel like when you get to an individual, personally, when you can trigger something in him to do what is needed in the team, I think you become a better manager than you were just, because it dies down after a while. After a while, when you look at a player that did so well, you're gonna respect him. Of course, the first point is like, wow, he achieved so much. But then afterwards, guys, it comes down to what is the team doing? Are we performing and are we winning? Then he keeps his respect. The moment he does not win, you're gonna look at him and think, you're like, okay, you got the answers now? Because the answers, he cannot put the boots back on and start playing with you. So he needs the answers as a manager, what he's gonna bring. And I feel like that part, I think, is the game changer in the dressing room, because it's the guy that really knows the psychological level of what each individual needs to make him perform to his best.
I'm not bringing Ruud Gullit up again.
Well, you just did.
Because I've had a go at Ruud Gullit. No, I haven't had a go at Rudd. I'm not a problem. I just I'll give an opinion. I've had a go at Mario for being late, so I'm not having a go at Dutch people. Because
I was on time, man. Stop telling I'm late.
Because I can throw Wim Janssen in there, and I love playing for Wim. And Wim was a great man manager, so that equals all the negativity out. It's balanced out now. I'm off the hook.
All right.
And I'm not bringing Rudd Hullett up again. Rudd.
I never played for him, so I don't know. So it is.
Ask Shearer and Co at Newcastle.
Maybe you could be a Netherlands fan at the World Cup.
A what?
A Netherlands fan at the World Cup. That can balance things out.
Yeah, I could be.
What do you reckon, Mario?
I like to support a team that goes all the way through the competition. Come on, get the questions.
All right. Block your ears, Jules. For Mario, start, bench or drop Dutch defenders Ronald Koeman, Jaap Stam and Virgil van Dijk.
Start or drop Dutch
start,
defenders?
Start, bench or drop?
Now, Jaap Stam is guaranteed in my team. You know, like, it's for me a no-brainer. I played with him. Wow, what a player he was, you know? Okay, Koeman. I was at the end, but come on. The ability of Koeman, I mean, the start, drop, Dutch defenders. I mean, why would I? All those names that the guy just highlighted, I would pick. Because they're clearly, like, the only thing. But Koeman
and
yeah, well, who do I drop?
They want to make it difficult for you.
So how many do I drop one or drop two?
No, because start one, bench one. You know, you got to drop. You got to drop one. If you'd have got here in time today, we'd have told you this.
Okay, I would. Okay, in my team, my time. Virgil van Dijk. Yes, I'll pick him now. Definitely now. Yeah, Koeman. I'll go from Koeman for now, no. But Koeman's time, then I might have to drop one of the other guys. So there you go, there you have your answer.
Hang on, right. They're all in their prime. You're the manager, Mario. Who starts, who's on the bench, and who's out of the team?
Jaap Stam, I think, guaranteed. I don't want to think anymore. Jaap Stam is my guy.
Fence sitting.
Right. Right, so Jaap Stam's your guy. We got that in the first answer.
Yeah.
Who are you benching?
Thank you, Craig.
I told you already. If I pick one, I can only pick one. That's all. Okay, so I can pick one and I pick it.
As I told you, if you'd have got here more than 17 seconds before the show started, we could have told you about this.
I want to come to your goal.
Hang on a minute. Just before
this
we do move on to actually get a proper answer.
You can only pick one, he said.
Yeah, I know, and I'm trying to look after him because you know what's going to happen now, Mario?
There's no hope. Don't try.
Every time you're on, you'll get a question like this to try and mess with you. So it's better to just answer it and have it done.
Okay.
Too late.
Okay, so the start. My starter will be Jaap. The guy I drop will be Koeman, and on the bench I will have Van Dijk.
He drops Koeman. You'd start him, wouldn't you, Jules?
There is a god.
Nah, I think
I
start Virgil.
But I just want. Yeah.
I think I start Virgil. I love Virgil, and also Virgil's favorite movie is The Lion King, which I relate completely. So Virgil in my team. Jaap Stam, I'm scared of him, so I would rather drop him completely and tell him never to come to my football club ever again because he scares me. And then I put Koeman on the bench. He can come on at the end to score a free kick, you know.
Funnily enough, you brought up The Lion King, and today we showed you that Kostas Manolas unveiling video for his new club. Apparently,
that's what made me think of it.
But yeah, the lion was called Simba, right, Jules? Did you see that?
Oh, no, I didn't know that. That's even better. That's even better story.
Yep, I heard that the lion was called Simba. I don't know if it's true, but I did see a reputable source put that out there. All right.
Oh, you mean our producer has just told you in your ears? I wouldn't have trusted that. I'd have sat
no, it wasn't just told in my
I'd
ears.
I'd have sat on that one for a while.
It wasn't.
Or I'd blotted that out.
All right. Has Craig or Mario ever had their own chant made by fans? If so, can they sing it like Pablo and Ale did? Last night, Pablo Zabaleta and Ale Moreno sang their own chants from when they were players.
Oh, my God.
That won't be happening.
Why? Yeah.
I don't even know.
I don't believe
man.
It. You must have had a chant, Craig.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah,
I don't know.
Mario?
Yeah, Super Mario, ole ole. That's the one I had. That's when I was at Ajax. I mean, look, the only thing why I'm telling you that is because it got me off the bench. So I have to be grateful to it. Because I remember sitting there, young boy, 90 years old, the coach heard the fans sing, said, you can warm up, and I came on. So yeah, Super Mario, that was kind of my jam.
Oh, nice. Nice stuff, Super Mario. Listen, thanks so much for sending in all your tweets today. We really did like them.
They really did sing their chants.
They really did sing their chants. In fact, Zabaleta posed once again for a photo that he had taken in 2008.
I'm so disappointed I wasn't on that show.
Well, you better go back and watch it. Yeah. Make sure to join us every day. Craig will be back tomorrow with Dan.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.